Imagine watching a $50 million real estate acquisition just disintegrate at the closing table.
Right, it happens all the time now.
Exactly. The underlying asset is fundamentally solid. The target market is expanding. The institutional capital is theoretically ready to deploy. But the deal dies anyway, and it's not because of a structural flaw in the concrete.
No, it's because the primary pitch deck was mathematically optimistic.
Precisely. That is the exact scenario playing out across the industry right now. We are evaluating the drastic evolution of commercial real estate underwriting in 2026, relying on highly specific market intelligence dispatched by Priyanshu Dathakar.
Who is, of course, a premier commercial real estate and hotel investment advisor and a licensed realtor.
Right. And the mandate today is simple. By the end of this briefing, you will understand the exact mathematical framework institutional capital demands and how these brutal new underwriting tactics will permanently alter how you evaluate any capital-intensive project.
Because the current landscape requires a fundamental recalibration of risk. For anyone allocating capital today, whether you are analyzing a multifamily portfolio or, say, a corporate acquisition,
The days of relying on a standard offering memorandum are over.
entirely. The OM, the master pitch deck for an asset, used to function as a marketing brochure in a zero interest rate environment. Today, it must function as a defensive, pre-underwritten blueprint.
If an OM does not immediately survive a forensic stress test, institutional analysts will discard it before a single property tour is scheduled,
Correct. It's a complete macro shift from marketing to defensive underwriting.
which requires us to look at the stark contrast between that historical standard and what the capital markets demand today. If we look back at the 2021 playbook, capital was cheap.
Debt was highly accessible.
Right. And the market basically operated on universal optimism. Because of that macroeconomic environment, the traditional OM presented what analysts call a linear pro forma.
Yes, the up and to the right spreadsheet.
Exactly. It assumed aggressive, unbroken rent growth year over year, static operating expenses, and a perpetually tight vacancy rate. It painted a picture of inevitable profit.
But as Prakay points out in this week's perspective, that linear pro forma is dead.
It's mathematically obsolete.
Completely. The macroeconomic environment has fundamentally inverted. We are operating under elevated capital costs, restrictive lending covenants, and frankly, an absolute zero tolerance policy for speculative math.
Lenders and equity partners are no longer buying the optimal outcome.
No. The 2026 standard dictates that an OM must provide a triangulated pro forma, presenting a base case, your standard expected operational projection.
That's just a baseline requirement now.
Right. Institutional capital today demands a rigorously modeled bear case. You must explicitly quantify the nightmares.
Which means isolating specific macroeconomic variables and modeling their failure. The analysis has to account for what happens to the debt service if rent growth is completely flat for 36 months. It has to model the cash flow impact if a planned asset lease-up takes an extra 12 months due to a localized recession. It has to project the exact operational deficit if sticky inflation drives labor and maintenance costs up by 8%.
While revenue remains entirely static.
Right. And if those worst-case variables are not explicitly integrated into the financial model, the asset is considered toxic by default.
It is a defensive posture that fundamentally rewrites how assets are positioned. Lenders today are pricing in the ditch and the blizzard before they even look at the vehicle's top speed.
That's the perfect analogy.
Right. If you are selling a high-performance asset, you do not lead with a video of it on a sunny racetrack. You lead with the crash test ratings, you show the airbag deployment data, and the precise mechanical limits of the suspension system during a catastrophic failure.
Capital allocators want to know how the vehicle survives a nightmare without liquidating the passengers.
Precisely.
Let's break down the core mechanics and technical hurdles of this asset, starting with the hidden liabilities that routinely blow up deals during the due diligence phase.
The paper costs.
Exactly. We need to examine the operational overhead, specifically taxes and insurance, and the complete elimination of what analysts call the 3% guess.
Right, the historical laziness of the brokerage industry.
Yeah. Historically, brokers took a highly estimated approach here. They would pull the seller's trailing 12 months of financials, locate the historical insurance and property tax expenditures,
Plug those exact numbers into the forward-looking model.
apply a nominal 3% annual increase to appear conservative, and finalize the projection.
Which is mathematical negligence in the current market. The 2026 underwriting standard operates on the premise that the seller's historical reality has zero bearing on the buyer's future reality.
Especially regarding commercial insurance.
Yes. That market has experienced unprecedented volatility driven by climate risk and replacement cost inflation. Using the seller's historical premium is an immediate disqualifier.
So Capital Now requires a forward-looking binding quote.
Right. From a commercial insurance broker embedded directly into the OM, it must reflect the actual underwritten premium that the specific buyer will face on day one of acquisition.
Because without that hard quote, the entire net operating income projection is functionally a hallucination.
Exactly. And while insurance presents a volatility risk, the property tax situation is structurally designed as a time bomb.
Particularly for heavy value-add deals or major adaptive reuse conversions. Let's look at a common scenario in the Central Ohio and broader Midwest markets.
A prime example.
You're converting an underperforming, distressed 150-key hotel into a highly stabilized multifamily housing complex. We need to look at the RevPAR trends revenue per available room. In distressed hospitality, that RevPR is usually abysmal, which suppressed the historical tax valuation.
Right. So if an analyst builds a pro forma for that conversion and models a slow, gradual increase in property taxes based on the hotel's previous valuation,
they're constructing a fatal mathematical error.
It is fatal because municipal tax assessments are triggered by specific developmental milestones, not gradual market appreciation.
Right. When a firm executes a massive change of use conversion, they are fundamentally altering the assessed value of the asset.
The historical taxes paid on a distressed hospitality footprint are completely irrelevant to the future tax burden of a modernized residential asset. The financial model must pinpoint the exact reassessment trigger and model the subsequent capital hit.
Wait, let me push back on this for a second. Wouldn't a massive private equity group or a sophisticated institutional buyer already have an army of analysts calculating local tax triggers?
You assume so, yes.
Right, so why is it the seller's responsibility to spoon-feed this specific municipal math to a billion-dollar equity fund? If the asset is viable, shouldn't the buyer's own underwriting catch the tax trajectory?
Pre's boots-on-the-ground approach proves exactly why that assumption destroys deals. You cannot assume a national or global equity fund understands the hyperlocal friction of a specific Midwest municipality.
Ah, because of county-level nuances.
Exactly. Every county auditor has different lag times, different reassessment triggers, and entirely different methodologies for capitalizing stabilized assets.
So the risk of miscalculating that timeline
is catastrophic to the capital stack. Let us walk through the exact timeline of a hotel conversion failure. Your project stabilizes and receives its final certificate of occupancy in month 19 of the business plan.
Okay, month 19.
The local assessor does not instantly issue the new tax bill. There is an administrative lag. The pro forma must mathematically reflect the massive stabilized tax hit precisely in month 31.
So if a buyer blends a generic tax increase across the first 3 years of their hold period, their cash flow projections for year three will look artificially healthy.
Right.
But when month 31 actually arrives, that lag catches up. The tax bill quadruples overnight, and the equity partners are caught entirely off guard as their distributions are wiped out to cover the municipal liability.
And that lack of precision is exactly why capital walks away from ambiguous OM presentations. That rigor extends directly to municipal incentives as well.
Like a pilot program.
Yes. A payment in lieu of taxes or a community reinvestment area abatement. The OM cannot just vaguely state that the property is eligible for tax mitigation.
It must detail the exact legal mechanics of that abatement.
It must map out the make-whole provisions. It has to explicitly define what happens to the capital stack if the property changes hands or if specific tenant compliance metrics are missed.
Because the goal is the absolute removal of friction.
Precisely. If a buyer's underwriter has to guess how a local tax abatement functions, they will simply allocate their capital to a different asset.
But here is where the underwriting actually gets weird, right?
Moving on to our next major pillar, how this exposure was entirely neutralized when we shift from the paper costs of running the building to the physical reality of the building itself.
Because paper math, no matter how rigorously triangulated your tax models are, means absolutely nothing if the structural bones of the asset are deteriorating.
Exactly. This requires a forensic evaluation of capital expenditures, or CapEx. This is where the yield compression of the current market brutally exposes the old value-add playbook.
Yeah, if we look at 2021, the value-add pitch was almost exclusively cosmetic.
Entirely surface level.
An OM would highlight the revenue potential of installing granite countertops, upgrading to luxury vinyl plank flooring, and applying modern paint palettes.
The thesis was that a $10,000 unit upgrade would justify a $200 monthly rent bump,
driving the overall valuation of the building up. But it systematically ignored the structural integrity of the property to focus on surface-level revenue generation.
Institutional investors today do not care about the granite countertops, not until they fully understand the MEP lifespan.
Right. Mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. They are demanding a granular audit of the deferred maintenance backlog.
They want to know the exact operational status of that infrastructure. They need to know when the central boiler is going to fail, the condition of the HVAC chillers, and the remaining life of the roof membrane.
Long before they calculate the return on kitchen upgrades.
Correct. The market requires a strict, priced-out timeline that distinguishes between day-one necessities, the structural repairs required to prevent life safety liabilities or immediate tenant turnover, and year-three cosmetic upgrades.
But how Price saw what the spreadsheets missed reveals a profound shift in valuation mathematics, specifically regarding the treatment of replacement reserves.
This is critical. The integration of replacement reserves directly into the net operating income is a devastating mechanism for artificially inflated assets.
Because historically, replacement reserves, the capital set aside to replace major structural components, were treated as a below-the-line expense.
Right. Sellers would calculate their NOI by taking total revenue and subtracting standard operating expenses, but they would strategically leave the heavy capital expenditures out of the equation.
They would present an NOI of $1 million, making the asset look highly profitable, and merely note in some buried appendix that the buyer would eventually need to spend $100,000 a year replacing aging HVAC units.
By forcing those reserves above the line directly into the NOI calculation, the 2026 standard fundamentally and permanently depresses the valuation of the asset to reflect its true, sustainable operational reality.
It's like auditing a corporate balance sheet.
Exactly. It is equivalent to evaluating a logistics company that claims exceptional quarterly profits, but strategically hides the fact that their entire fleet of trucks requires engine replacements next year.
If you do not deduct the depreciation and replacement cost of the fleet from their operating profit, you are buying a fabricated yield.
And the capitalization rate math proves how destructive this is to asset values.
Let's run that math.
Yeah.
The value of a commercial building is its NOI divided by the market cap rate.
Right.
So if a building generates $1 million but requires $100,000 a year in structural reserves, its true operational NOI is $900,000.
Correct.
In a market with a 6% cap rate, removing that $100,000 from the NOI reduces the mathematically justified purchase price of the asset by over $1.6 million.
Which is exactly why institutional capital demands that the 5 to 10% reserve requirement is modeled up front. It ensures that only truly viable, mathematically sound deals survive the underwriting process.
It prevents capital from being trapped by inflated yields that disintegrate the moment a structural component fails.
Exactly. So we have modeled the triangulated revenue, embedded forward-looking insurance quotes, mapped the precise month the municipal tax burden explodes,
and priced the lifespan of the plumbing directly into the NOI reduction.
We have quantified the true brutal cost to acquire, stabilize, and maintain the asset. Now we confront the final hurdle of the modern OM. The mechanics of financing.
Because in an environment defined by high interest rates and constrained liquidity, ambiguity regarding debt placement is the ultimate deal killer.
In previous cycles, listing an asset as free and clear was a strategic advantage.
Right. It meant the seller owned the property outright. There was no existing encumbrance, and the buyer had a clean slate to secure their own debt.
In a highly liquid market, free and clear signaled opportunity. But in the constrained debt markets of 2026, delivering a property without a clearly defined financing mechanism leaves an unacceptable level of execution risk on the table.
A buyer cannot simply assume a commercial bank will issue a favorable loan on a stabilized asset, let alone a distressed one.
Therefore, the OM must transition from a passive description of the asset to an active roadmap for capital placement.
The seller's advisory team must provide actionable financing scenarios.
This requires integrating current term sheets or, at minimum, heavily vetted soft quotes from commercial mortgage brokers directly into the presentation.
You have to mathematically prove to the prospective buyer that the exact debt structure required to execute the business plan actually exists in the current lending environment.
This is especially critical when evaluating distressed assets that require a bridge-to-perm pathway.
Right. Let's define that. A bridge loan is high-cost, short-term, floating-rate debt used to acquire a distressed property and fund the initial turnaround.
And PERM refers to the permanent, lower-cost, fixed-rate debt that an investor must refinance into once the property reaches stabilization.
And the single most important metric in this transition is the DSCR, the debt service coverage ratio,
which operates exactly like stress testing a household budget. The DSCR asks a very simple question. Does this asset produce enough raw cash flow to cover its mandatory loan payments?
A DSCR of 1.0 is essentially living perfectly paycheck to paycheck.
The building makes exactly enough to pay the bank, leaving zero margin for error.
Right. The moment utility costs spike or a major tenant defaults, the asset goes into the red. So institutional lenders require a cushion.
Typically a minimum 1.25 DSCR, meaning the asset generates 25% more cash than the debt requires.
So if an OM is cushioning a distressed turnaround, it must map the precise timeline and the exact operational metrics required to hit that 1.25 DSCR target.
If the underwriter does not map the mathematical exit ramp from the high-cost bridge debt, institutional capital will not engage.
Because the risk of getting trapped in a floating-rate bridge loan when the asset fails to hit the required DSCR for permanent financing.
That is exactly how private equity firms lose entire portfolios to foreclosure. The OM must pre-solve that anxiety by proving the bridge-to-perm pathway is mathematically viable, even in a bear case scenario.
Conversely, if an asset possesses assumable low-interest debt, the entire marketing strategy inverts.
Oh, entirely. Let's say a current operator secured a fixed 3% interest rate in a previous cycle, and the covenants allow a new buyer to legally assume that exact note.
In a market where new commercial paper might price at 7 or 8%, that assumable 3% loan is arguably the most valuable component of the transaction.
It fundamentally alters the yield profile. That is why assumable debt is no longer buried in the financial appendices. It becomes the lead narrative on page one.
It is a definitive mathematical advantage that immediately neutralizes the elevated capital costs suppressing the broader market.
It allows a buyer to achieve 2021 yield metrics in a 2026 interest rate environment.
If we synthesize this entirely technical real estate framework, it translates directly to universal principles of capital allocation. Whether you are modeling a corporate merger, pitching a Series C funding round to venture capitalists, or acquiring a mid-market logistics company.
Ambiguity in the funding mechanics is fatal.
The era of pitching a maximized, best-case scenario and assuming the equity partners will navigate the logistical friction is over.
Capital demands that you pre-solve their anxiety. You must architect the exact operational route through the worst case scenario before you ask for a single dollar.
It is a total shift from asset marketing to fiduciary rigor. An offering memorandum in 2026 is a forensic due diligence foundation.
It must proactively neutralize the deeply cynical, mathematically aggressive questions that institutional credit committees will ask before they even authorize a site visit.
Priyanshu Adithakar defines this shift with absolute clarity. The core takeaway from his intelligence briefing summarizes the current institutional mandate perfectly. He says, if your OM doesn't prove viability in today's capital constraints, it's not an offering memorandum, it's just expensive stationery.
It is a stark assessment, but it is a definitive reality of capital deployment today. If a financial model cannot survive the triangulated bear case, the capital stays on the sidelines.
It forces a severe reevaluation of every financial projection we make. And that leaves us with a final macroeconomic thought to consider. One that extends far beyond the confines of commercial real estate or private equity.
Right.
If institutional capital has fundamentally shifted toward this defensive, pre-underwritten framework demanding a catastrophic bear case for every single operational variable, how long until this exact same algorithmic scrutiny completely takes over everyday consumer finance? Think about the underwriting on residential mortgages, personal auto loans, or even small business credit lines.
It's an inevitable trickle down.
Are we entering a sustained macroeconomic era where optimism is entirely priced out of the broader economy, and only those who can mathematically prove they can survive the ditch and the blizzard will ever get the keys?
You've got the perspective. Now it's time to drive the news forward. To ensure you never miss a market shift, tap subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If today's insights are going to impact your strategy, share this episode with a colleague or investment partner who needs to see the big picture. For actionable guides, newsletter subscriptions, and direct advisor consultation, head over to bearinvestors.com. Thank you for listening. We'll watch the market closely. Until next week.